ComingToBook.com.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Wednesday, December 13th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me for the hump day edition of the show. Two guests join us here today. The first, Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. The second, Wes Reynolds, who you know from Twitter, at Wes Reynolds, and the number one. We're going to chat some college football and some NFL with Brian, NFL and NBA here in the second segment today with Wes Reynolds. Over at bangthebook.com, we have all 38 college football, 39, whatever, 30, all 39 college football games previewed. We've got picks, analysis, coaching updates, motivation angles, all that type of stuff in those previews over there at the website, so make sure that you check that out. Also, Parker Michaels' Wednesday NHL picks are up here for today. He's been running a little bit on the wrong side of variance here lately, but he's still putting in the work, still great write-ups there with that. So I imagine he'll be back on track here in very short order. NBA and NHL situational betting articles up over there as well. Those contests and cash prizes, all you have to do is sign up. Daily streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won. You can hang out in those, see if you can pick some winners, get yourself some cash prizes here, pad your pockets a little bit for the holiday season. Also, make sure that you're checking out the sportsbook reviews that we have over there. Exclusive deposit promo codes for all of the reputable offshore sportsbooks. Everyone from Bookmaker to Five Dimes to DSI to Bet Online to VietBet to Bet Any Sports to Heritage to Just Bet, GT Bets, all the places that are out there, Bovada, all of them are listed over there in our sportsbook review section. As you know, that DSI promo code BTB and the number 25 still active with a $25 free bet just for signing up. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook, 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino as well. But you want to make sure you have as many outs as possible here with all of the games that are on the board on a daily basis. Two guests join us here on the program today. The first, Mr. Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Everything's going great. Good to be on the show.
Have you back on the show here today, and good to have a lot of college football to talk about as well.
Yeah, you mentioned the 39 games. I've got inside information on games 40 and 41, but I'll deal that later, so since we don't know who's playing in those games.
All right, well, one question we've got from a listener out there before we look at some of the specific matchups here, and I think this is a real good one. I think it's a good time to talk about something like this. Listener out there holding a Clemson 6-1 ticket to win the national championship. That is at C Moneybags out there on Twitter. And great number on Clemson right now, especially with them being the number one team here in the college football playoff semifinal, but they're playing Alabama. So obviously, you know, you have to seriously consider if you want to sit on that 6-1 position or cut into it a little bit with a hedge. Brian, Alabama, 2.5, 3-point favorite out there in the marketplace. You pretty much have to hedge in this situation, don't you?
Well, it all depends on what his plans were coming in when he made that bet. I had a similar experience going on because I have Georgia at 20-1. And that was the only future that I had played. I played that after they'd lost to Auburn. I thought there was some value there. I probably could have got a little bit better, but I got 20-1. I've heard other people had 30-1. But basically at that point, I said, well, if they beat either Auburn or Alabama in the championship game of the SEC, they're going to the Final Four, and I said, then I can hedge out. So I bet Auburn on the money line for maybe 15, 20%, just enough so if I won that game, I put 500 to, you know, to win 10,000. So if I won that game, I made sure that I showed a profit. So I think I bet 1,000 on that. So now I've got the situation where once they're in the Final Four, I can hedge out. And lucky enough that the money's coming in on Georgia, so I can either hedge out by taking the points, the small amount of points, or I could take the money line the other way. And I'll play that since I've already got $1,000 invested now. I'll probably play that for $2,000 or $3,000. And then if they advance to the championship game, then I'll hedge out on that again. So hopefully I'll be able to make, you know, $3,000 or whatever, regardless of what I do, and that's how I set it up. So I knew going in what my plans were in this. A lot of people like Georgia. They think Georgia's obviously the best defense out there. They and Clemson have the best two defenses. So it's a good spot to be in. And I know Cheeto, when you had him on the show, he does a lot of that. He does a lot of that for every sport. And he sets himself up to hedge as the year goes on. And that's just an experience better, and you're going to do that. So if he's in a pretty good spot with what he has right now. Obviously, he probably, if he was going to hedge, he probably was better off doing that early on before Alabama started taking money. But still, it shouldn't hurt him too bad. And it all depends on what he wants out of it. If he wants to guarantee himself a profit, there's ways to do that. And if he thinks they can get past Alabama, he just put down whatever you put on that game. Let's say you bet 500 on the game or on the 6-1 on them. You just put another 500 on when they play Alabama. And that way, he really doesn't lose anything. He lets it ride off to the next round, which is probably a little bit better. They'd probably be favored over the other two teams going into that game. Small favorite, but that's the way I usually treat it. If I know what I'm going to do, I just try to make it so that I can make myself a profit regardless of what happens.
And I think one of the things that's pretty challenging about it here is, let's say hypothetically it's 100 to win 600. And you've got Alabama money line out there now. The places that do have a money line up in the minus 135, minus 140 range. So that's a little bit of a tough hedge. I mean, you could play 280 to win 200, then you make $100, but you've already cut 280 into the 600 that you have out there, and you still have to sweat another game. So it's kind of a difficult spot to be in with a 6-1 spread as opposed to the 20-1 that you've got. But another thing that throws an intriguing wrench into this is that you're going to watch the game. You're going to be watching Alabama and Clemson. Even if you didn't have action on the game, even if you didn't have that future, you're still watching that game because you're a college football fan and it has the potential to be the best game of the season. So instead of taking a position before the game, like we've seen the minus 125s, minus 130s, minus 140s out there, you can also look for a live opportunity. Now, clearly the problem is if Alabama gets up 10-0, then you really don't have a whole lot of hedging margin because you're not going to lay that big money line price live on Alabama. If Clemson scores, you get Alabama at probably plus money or even money, then you could make a decision there with that. So really, I hate to have a cop-out type of answer here. I mean, if you want to guarantee profit, you do something before the game. I think with my personal risk profile, I would probably sit on it and take my chances and look for a live opportunity. Because if you're talking about 100 to win 600, we talk about in-game betting limits, hedging into a $100 bet isn't that big of a deal. If you were a really high roller that had, say, 10,000 on it, you'd have to do something pregame because you wouldn't be able to get that much down live. So I do think live betting opens up a lot of possibilities here. Just a matter of what your risk profile is and, how much you actually put down as an initial investment.
Yeah, definitely. And is these bowls, the Final Four, both teams are coming to play. Many of these other bowls, you don't know the situation. And a lot of people want to run out and play these ahead of time, just assuming the motivation on these teams. Well, when you have the chance to play second halves and you have the chance to play live betting, you can actually see how these teams are coming out. I've been to the Las Vegas Bowl before, and there was a team there that we didn't think was going to show up at all. And all of a sudden, they're the team that is really excited. You could see it on the sideline that they're the team that's getting fired up and the other team's going through the motions. And to be able to be there and see that is something that you want to use in live betting. And especially in these earlier bowl games where you're not sure who's going to show. We had a bowl meeting for the Tuesday meeting yesterday, and that was one of the things we discussed is how you're approaching these games. And a lot of us just said, we don't have a lot of money on the games beforehand, but we're looking to see how the teams come out and how they play, because the lines maker he's got a chart basically. And if he sees a 10-point favorite that's up by a certain amount at halftime, he's just going to look at the chart and say, okay, this is the number we use. But that's obviously not going to have the same effect on a game that you're watching. And that's one of the reasons, I talked about giving out my second half plays over Twitter. We continue to have success with that, is being able to watch these games and seeing why these teams have scored. And it was something freaky going on. I'm trending more and more. I mean, in Europe, live betting takes in so much more money than the pregame betting does. And it's because they've had it for a few years. It hasn't really caught on in the United States yet. But I really like it because you can see what's going on. If, for example, if you're betting in-game basketball and your star player has got three fouls right off the bat, that's not going to be affected by the halftime line and the lines that they put out on that. So they're using just – so you can take definite advantage in this. And I think this is the way sports gambling is going to really take off, is in the live betting.
I think so, too. And that's something that we've been talking about here a lot more lately. And when I was out there in Vegas last month, that was something you and I talked about, and something I also talked about with Brad Powers and Rolf Michaels when we went to dinner, is that, you know, that is the future of the industry. And right now, it's a softer market than the full game market. As long as you have the ability to get down live and watch these games and pay attention to them, or, you know, follow along with the box scores and look for those things that stand out, like you said, about guys in foul trouble, or, you know, from a football standpoint, if a team's moving the ball, but they've had some red zone turnovers or something like that, they're probably not going to stop moving the football. And you would think that the red zone turnovers probably should slow down or stop. So, you know, that can be a really advantageous betting angle to look at. But as far as things go here on the show, you know, we are a little bit limited in the sense that we do have to look at these full game lines. And we'll go ahead and look ahead to Saturday with the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl between North Texas and Troy. Good one here. Should have both of these teams very motivated for this one. And interesting that as we're talking here, Brian, this number has kind of bounced around a little bit. Was up to 7 at some shops with Troy as a big favorite. Then it was 6.5. Now we're seeing Pinnacle down to +6, -117 on North Texas. So as we get closer to the game, looks like somebody influential out there does like the North Texas side.
Yeah, and I don't blame him. I kind of lean that way also. Now that the line's going down, obviously it has an effect. There is still 1-7 out here in Las Vegas, 2-7s. But, yeah, the sharper books are getting down to 6 currently. You know, it's bouncing around, as you say, as we're speaking. But I've got a list of, you know, 3 or 4 books that I consider sharp, and they're all in that 6 range. The Las Vegas books are just starting to open now, so they'll follow on that. And, you know, the Westgate's already down to 6. And to me, that's that and the South Point are the sharpest books out here in Vegas. A little money coming in on North Texas, but we'll see as the week goes on, different betting groups getting involved here. But, yeah, you take a look at this North Texas team, and I chart the explosive plays. They're down 7 on the season, whereas Troy is up 5, so slight edge to Troy there. Yeah, but North Texas competition has been a little bit better than Troy, so that'll probably wash that out. And, you know, a lot of things I look at, you know, Troy's a team that the only problem they've had is turning the ball over. They've turned the ball over a lot in the first half of games. Like I said before, I do my charting in the first half when things don't go crazy and a lot of garbage yards in the second half. But they're down 8 turnovers in the first half and down 2 sacks, whereas Troy is up 4 turnovers and down a sack. So Troy has put more pressure on the quarterback a little bit here, and that's been my major concern here is North Texas turning the ball over. You always have that problem when you have an underdog is turning the ball over. And that would be my only concern here for North Texas. But my numbers say that North Texas has a little bit of a bargain price here, even at the 6. And that's the side I'm looking at this early in the week.
All right, we'll slide down a spot here on the board game, 203-204, the Cure Bowl between Georgia State and Western Kentucky. This one's sponsored by Auto Nation, for those that are worried about that type of thing. Western Kentucky is now up to a 6.5-point favorite here. This number opened 5. I'm not the least bit surprised to see one-sided action here for this one, and I think a 7 will be coming sooner rather than later.
Yeah, this is a team in Georgia State that I have serious concerns about them moving the football if they fall behind in this game. And that's your major concern here is you got a Western Kentucky team, although not nearly as dynamic as they were last year. This is a team that has put some good points on the board in the middle of the season. You know, they only scored 7 against Illinois in the opener, but they got better as the season went on. You know, they putting up 45 against Charlotte, 33 against Ball State, 35 Old Dominion. So they've done really well against the lesser teams, and I consider Georgia State one of those lesser teams. 2 games, they scored 10 against Appalachian, 10 against Idaho, obviously 10 against Troy, and, you know, shut out against Penn State, which you obviously would expect that early in the season. But the Georgia State side, the offense really concerns me. And when you get behind in a game like that, You've got to throw the ball a little bit more than what they're looking to do. And I like the Western Kentucky side a little bit more. The line, as long as it stays below a touchdown, I think we have some value here with Western Kentucky. And if you look, at least in the Vegas for the most part is 6. I see 1.5. But if you look at the sharper books, the Chris's and Pinnacles, they're at 6.5. So they're taking some money on Western Kentucky, and I lean that direction.
Yeah, Georgia State is the lowest power-rated team to make a bowl game for me, not just this year, but I would say probably within the last few years. I mean, kudos to them for that, for going 6-5. And as I mentioned earlier in the week, if they had played Memphis, they'd be a 6-6 team here going to a bowl game. But, you know, statistically, nothing really stands out about this team. So you would think that they would show up motivated, but also Western Kentucky, and I know that this is an angle that Rolf Michaels really likes, you know, that's a team that has a shot to have a winning season. And he likes to look at that angle for those teams that are 6-6 going into bowl games, you know, to go 7-6 as opposed to 6-7 just kind of feels a little bit better. And maybe those are some of the angles that we do need to look at here, because as I said, you know, the full game market has just gotten very, very tight.
It has. And I know Mark Lawrence, one of our colleagues from the Cleveland area, been there for years down in Florida. Now he's always used that, and he's big on teams that get to play for a winning record or get to go for the 10 wins or get to go for the most wins in a senior class, that kind of stuff. And the team rallies around that type of stuff. So, yeah, some of the things I look for when I'm looking at the bowls is there's a lot of good underdog plays. Underdogs have done pretty well in the bowl, especially these early games. You play them on the money line, you know, and they've done very well. The reason why the underdogs do better now than they do later on is you've got lesser teams. There's more variance. There's a lot more variance in like the Sun Belt and the MAC Conference USA than there would be in the Big Ten or the SEC. So you've got a better chance to make good money betting money line underdogs in these games with the smaller conferences, and it's a really good way to look at the bowls. And you know, most of the time we've got a lot of bowls here with low numbers. Low totals in these games, and underdogs in the low total games have always done very well. So, you know, there's a certain things that I look at, and obviously you have to look into where the motivation is. But I make a little check marks next to each team, and if they fit certain criteria, and then I just handicap from that. Don't blindly use it for it's an automatic play, but it points me in that direction. And if you are playing these before the game start, that's a nice little angles to take a look at.
Let's go to game 205-206 here on the board. Oregon takes on Boise State in the Las Vegas Bowl. Just to look at the forecast, looks like a nice Saturday out there in Sin City. You going to the game?
No, it's too cold. It's to the point of the season now where I'm so used to the hot weather that I rarely go outside when it gets cold. And, you know, right now it's probably 45 degrees outside, and that's way too cold for this guy.
Yeah, move back to Cleveland where there's already snow on the ground and try telling me that it's too cold in Vegas when it's supposed to be 65 on Saturday. All right, man, you've gotten weak living out there. That's what it is.
I have, and it's funny because just about everybody I've talked to that have moved out here, they were like you before they moved out here. Then after a couple of years, they go, man, how did I ever take those zero temperatures back in Pittsburgh, Ohio, Buffalo, or wherever they're from?
I went to clean off my wife's car this morning. I don't know why. She has a remote starter, so I really don't need to go out there and do that in the morning anymore. But one of our friends was out there, and she's actually moving down south here in the coming weeks, and she was like, yep, not going to miss this. And I said, well, yeah, I mean, how could you possibly miss this? I mean, it's awful. And not only that, you know, like every time, and people know this when they live in cold weather climates, like the first two or three snowfalls of the season, everybody forgets how to drive. It's like they're seeing it for the first time. You know, people make fun of cities in the South that, you know, it snows a half an inch and everything shuts down. You know, they're not used to it. They're not accustomed to it. They don't have the machinery to clear off the roads and make sure that things aren't slick. Around here, I mean, they're piling tons and tons of salt down. Like, it's not that hard. So that rant aside, Oregon's a 7.5-point favorite here in this one, which you're not going to because you're a freeze baby. What do you think about this game?
Yeah, and in fact, it's the way it is out here when it rains too. It hasn't rained in like 100 days, and when it rains, people go crazy. It's totally different depending on where you're at. It's funny, but yeah, Oregon and Boise State. You got to keep in mind, explosive plays. Oregon's up 6 on the season. Boise's up 18, but you got to keep in mind the Oregon quarterback is now back, and they performed so much better when he was out on the field. They did nothing when he wasn't able to get out there on the field. So you've had really two different storylines for Oregon. You probably got to go back and compile your stats on the quarterback, which is there right now. I can't think of his name. Begins with an H. But he's had so much success there. And you take a look at the games where he didn't play, and they got 10 points against Washington State, 7 Stanford, 14 UCLA, 3 Washington. So big difference against the 48 and the 69 they scored in the last 2 weeks. So he's a huge difference maker. So when you're looking at this, don't use your traditional stats because it might point you in the wrong direction here. I've got the line basically where it is, so I'm not getting too involved here. Boise does play here all the time, being in this conference. They've been to Vegas. It may not be quite as much of a party atmosphere for them as it would be for Oregon, if you're looking at that angle. But this is a game I'm really not getting involved in. But I think Boise's been a little bit overrated all season long. It would not surprise me if Oregon wins this by a comfortable number. But then again, you have to read the motivation and see. I would think after scoring 48 and 69 points, Oregon's probably extremely happy to play another football game. Boise had another successful season here. Weren't as good as they were in past editions. Yeah, this would be an interesting game and should be a lot of fun.
I think what's challenging about breaking down Oregon's season is that it just so happened that while Justin Herbert was out with the broken collarbone, that was when they played the best teams on their schedule. That's when they played the Washington States, the Stanfords, those types of teams. And then when they had him, they were playing some of the dregs that were on their schedule. I mean, they blew out Nebraska in that 42-35 game. It was a 42-7 game coming into the fourth quarter, but they played, Washington State, Stanford, UCLA, and Utah without Herbert, and I think Washington as well. So, that was challenging for them in that they played their best competition without their quarterback, so we couldn't really see how they stacked up against really good teams, and they hung some good numbers on some bad teams. So I feel like this is kind of a little bit of a high variance game in the sense that, yeah, Oregon's been much better with Herbert as quarterback, and you have to respect them for that. And obviously with the line moving up from 5 to 7.5, we've seen that respect. But Boise State's probably closer to those better teams that they played without him than the teams that they played with him. So that's something that I'm kind of intrigued with in this game. And again, this is one of those where live betting is going to be a big factor. If Oregon can move the football with ease with Justin Herbert, this thing could become a boat race and Boise State can't keep up. So, that is one of those live betting types of games where I think that makes a whole lot of sense. Let's go to game 207, 208 here. Marshall takes on Colorado State. This one to me, and I've talked about this a little bit on the show, and I'm kind of curious to hear your thoughts, Brian. I think this is one of my favorite bowl games, and I love Colorado State in this one.
Yeah, Colorado State has the advantage of this game being played in altitude because Colorado State plays in altitude all the time. A little bit different from Marshall, although it's different in the bowl games because the teams are there for a few days. Obviously, you're not running full speed on a football field, but you are practicing, so maybe that altitude won't have such a big deal here in Albuquerque. But yeah, you've got a Marshall team that's up 9 on explosive plays on the season. Colorado State's up 5. I like what Marshall's done. They were a team that really had every ball bounce against them last year. And they've been a moneymaker this year, and I've had them a few times. But they peaked halfway through the season after beating Middle Tennessee. They actually only won one of their last 5 games, beating Western Kentucky by a touchdown. So it's a team limping into the playoffs, excuse me, limping into the bowl season. But you also have a Colorado State who lost 3 out of 4 coming in. They did beat San Jose State in that last game. I like to play on teams that are limping in because it's a brand new season. You're not playing back to back like you would be during a regular season. A lot of people give up on you. And teams that enter the bowl season on a nice hot streak usually do not perform well. It's like when teams in the NFL or in college football have a bye week. If you're playing really well, you don't want to have that bye week. And that's the situation we find ourselves into in bowl season, because you've got that little break in between. And we've got two teams with something to prove here. Colorado State is the team that I think is a little bit better here. I've got them as a 4.5-point favorite, and the line's roughly 5.5, so I don't have much of an advantage in the line. But Colorado State has played really well. And you go back and you look, not a lot of people looked at this early in the season when they went to Alabama, but they lose to Alabama 41-23, but they had a lot of success running the football on Alabama. And that was before Alabama started having all their injuries. And now we see now, like the last couple of games Alabama's played, the last two or three games, they can be run on because of some of their injuries. So Colorado State really, in my mind, when they played Alabama and they looked so good, and obviously Alabama's not getting up for that game, but still the difference in the athletes on these two teams for Colorado to be able to have some success on the line was very telling to me. And so I didn't get quite as excited about Alabama as a lot of other people did. And, Colorado State has struggled a little bit since, but it's a very good team coming off back-to-back 7-win teams, won 10-8 the 2 years before. So this is a quality team in the Rams.
Let me ask you about this. This is something I talked about on Monday's show, and I want to get your thoughts on it as somebody who's seen a lot of things in your history of doing this. Nick Stevens, this is a guy who did very well at the start of last year, then got benched, wound up sitting and watching as a junior transfer, and then a true freshman took over his job in the middle of the season. He came back at the end of the year because of injuries and was absolutely dominant for Colorado State down the stretch. This year he was the unquestioned starter, but he's a senior. So this is a guy playing his last college football game, last chance to impress the NFL scouts. Is that a betting angle or is that more of a storyline?
I think it's more of a storyline. You looked at what he did last year, 171 quarterback rating, as opposed to his backup, which is 146. So there's a 19-5 touchdown to interception ratio. He's a quality quarterback, and the Rams can be a very good team at certain times. I don't know if one game is going to impress people when they're looking at a quarterback. They're going to look at everything. Obviously, these games are all in a national audience, so they'll get some viewers. But the guys who are doing the drafting for the NFL teams, they go far more in depth than just one game. And it could be personal motivation for him. I don't think it really matters a whole lot, to be honest with you.
All right, fair enough. I was just curious to get your thoughts on it, and maybe that's something I'll crowdsource some opinions on here as we go forward. But one more game coming up on Saturday. That's the Camellia Bowl. Middle Tennessee State takes on Arkansas State. Any strong opinions on this one, Brian?
Yeah, I actually like the Middle Tennessee State side here. You've got Stocksdale back and healthy, and they're a totally different team, Middle Tennessee State, with Scott Stocksdale. You look at the numbers, and once again, these are all first-half numbers. This is a team that in the first half of the season had a negative 13 turnover ratio. But when you look at their yards per play against the opponents in the first half, they outgained the yards per play in 8 of the 12 games. So they moved the ball, and we talked about that a little earlier about live betting. They moved the ball very well, but they were really hurt in turnovers. In fact, if you take a look at the first half, they only had one drive starting in opponent territory this year. The opponents had 11 drives starting in their territory. And that was all because of these turnovers. Now you've got your veteran quarterback back in Brett Stocksdale. He was a 31-7 touchdown to interception ratio last year, 150 quarterback rating. When he's out there, this is a totally different team. And you, very similar to Oregon, you could look at the games that he has played and the games that he has not played and break those down. And, this is a team you're getting what I consider with Stocksdale, the better team, and you're getting them as an underdog in this game of plus money. I talked about playing teams on the money line in the bowl games. This is one game that I will be playing on the money line because Arkansas State, while it's a good team, They do play in the Leicester Conference in the Sun Belt as opposed to the Conference USA. And it's a step-up game for them. And, you know, coming off that game where they could have won the league championship against Troy, I'll let that slip away after a halftime lead. I'm looking to play Middle Tennessee. And out of this first day's games, that's my strongest play.
All right, one more bowl game I want to hit on with you here real quickly. The Boca Raton Bowl, Akron takes on Florida Atlantic. You are a MAC expert, so you've followed this Akron team very closely here throughout the season. They are getting 22.5. There is a 23 out there at Bovada as well. This was a number that opened 17, and there's been no resistance with bets on the Zips at all whatsoever. Is this number too high? I mean, can you step in front of the lane train with the Owls, or – are you just looking to lay the heavy number here?
Well, this is how I'm looking at this game. First off, explosive plays. Akron's down 15 on the season. That's the third worst out of all the bowl teams. Florida Atlantic's plus 7, but obviously as the season went on, they got to be a little bit more explosive team. I'm looking from an Akron standpoint. The senior quarterback who played in the last game, and once again, I'm not good with names, but anyway, he played the last game coming off an injury. Looked decent. The young quarterback that they had is actually from Boca Raton, so he's from that area. So this is a big homecoming for him. I would expect Akron to use both quarterbacks in this game. Extra time to prepare here. Florida Atlantic. Obviously, Lane Kiffin, there's a lot of people that out there looking for a new coach, and I'm sure they've contacted Lane. And he's had a lot of fun with Twitter and everything, and the team is doing really well. And if you were a stock buyer in this game, you've got a Florida Atlantic team who is as high as it's going to be against an Akron team who just, even though they were blown out, they were able to cover the spread miraculously against Toledo in that MAC championship game. So my line on this is about 20. You're talking 23 right now. So there is some value on Akron. I think Akron's the way, if you're going to play this, Akron's the way to go. But what does hurt me is the explosive play situation, being down 15 on the season. And Florida Atlantic does have that ability. As of late, they've really open up the playbook a little bit more. But if you treat it like a stock, most of the guys who are professional bettors do it that way. You don't bet teams, you bet numbers. And this number is really high now. They wanted to get out on the market because they probably figured this was going to be a popular bet. I think it's the time to start buying back. I don't see this getting much higher. The public, of course, will see how Akron was crushed by Toledo, and they'll probably be on Florida Atlantic. But there'll be some wise guys buying this thing back, especially if it hits 24.
All right, well, let's go over to the NFL side here, because I think we've got a pretty interesting angle to talk about this week. And that's the fact that we have Saturday games here. It's the first time this year that we've had the Saturday games. It's something that we will carry through here, I believe, in week 16, but not week 17. I'll have to double check that here as we're talking. But how do you approach these Saturday games, Brian? I mean, we always look at Thursday night as being a tough spot for teams with a quick turnaround. Saturday is a couple days later, but it's not Sunday. So do you adopt some sort of hybrid between the Thursday and Sunday approach? Do you treat these games any differently at all?
Well, actually, I'm undefeated on Saturday NFL plays this year.
Very good.
Thank you. I think you just treat it more like a Sunday game. Usually teams get the Mondays, basically you get the day off. Tuesday is more of a walkthrough, and then Wednesday they start preparing. I don't think it makes as much of a difference if you listen to all the players in the NFL talking about the Thursdays that have played them. They hate Thursday games. You just don't have time for your body to recover. I think the one less day isn't going to have that much of an effect on it. Obviously, Thursday has a major effect on it. And if you've seen the games played on Thursday, it's just not the same quality as you find on a Sunday. It's similar to a Monday. I mean, if we've had this all season long. We've got a team's played Monday football. They played Monday night football, and then they come back Sunday the next week. So that's similar to a Sunday and Saturday now. It hasn't had that much of an effect that I can see going from Monday to Sunday. So I'm not giving it that much of a of a look because it's very similar, I think.
Interesting line move here in the first game, game 303-304. Chicago takes on Detroit. At least both of these games are division matchups, so you do have some familiarity there, and at least the NFL tries to do that with some of these unconventional games. A lot of the times the Thursday night game is a division game. Same thing here with the two Saturday games. Then usually Monday Night Football also winds up being a division game. But Chicago opened 7 in this one. It's been a steady stream of Chicago money, down to 5.5. There's actually a 5 with reduced juice sitting out there at Bet Online right now. Are you surprised by the line move here, Brian?
Not really. When teams look as good as Chicago did last week, they're going to take a little bit of money. Detroit's been one of those teams all year long that numbers show that they're pretty good, but if you watch them play, like the eye test, it's basically Stafford is the only guy that really is the playmaker on this Detroit team. Stafford has a really good game. They look better. Detroit's a team that Stafford hasn't done as well against really good teams. He hasn't done as well on the road. Well, now you find him at home against a losing football team in Chicago. These teams just played, a little over a month ago, and the Lions win 27-24 in Chicago. They led 21-17 at the half. So that was pretty much what you would expect. They were a 3-point road favorite. They win by 3. So I don't know what we can gather out of that. This is the third road game in 4 weeks for Chicago, whereas Detroit is back home after playing 3 or 4 on the road. And then Detroit's got that Cincinnati that Chicago just played on deck. So I think the line's a little bit meh. I probably would have made it 4.5, so I could see the line going down. It's 6 at one spot in Vegas, but 5.5 just about everywhere else. And then with Chicago looking so good last week, I could see that. But this is one of the games I'm probably not going to get too involved with. There's better games on the board for me.
I think what's really interesting is, Chicago beat up on the Bengals last week, and I did take Chicago in the Super Contest, so that was a good call on my part there. But I don't think that game said as much about Chicago as it said about Cincinnati. And for Cincinnati coming off of that physical Pittsburgh game, it was an awful, awful spot for them, and Chicago was the right play to make in that game. And then you see a similar situation in game 305-306 with the Chargers now a road favorite in Kansas City, which – in week 5 or week 6 of the season would have been completely unthinkable. But the Chargers looked so good against Washington last week and have looked good here over the last several weeks. But also, I think that the Chargers, the results they've had against their opponents, probably say more about their opponents than they say about the Chargers. So I'm surprised by the fact that Los Angeles is a road favorite here.
Yeah, I'm a bit surprised myself. I was on Kansas City last week. I really like that situation for them. And you've got a team right now, especially going into last week, where everybody's given up on them. And they had that divisional game against Oakland, very important game. They play the Chargers, and then they got Miami and Denver on deck, which should be 2 easy games, but the game in Denver obviously will not be that easy for visitors. But, yeah, you've got this team here. And the last time they played, the Chiefs won 24-10 at home, led at the half 17-10. They did have a 3-turnover advantage in the first half of that game and really put the game away at that point. But that was back when Kansas City was really creating turnovers all over the place, and they've done that all season long. They've been winning the turnover battle, and that's what the Chiefs do. That's what Andy Reid coach teams do. They win a turnover battle. And the Chargers have been in every game this season just about, and they found ways to lose. Now the coin is flipping a little bit, and now they're finding ways to win. But go back and look at the teams that they have played: Washington, Cleveland, Dallas, Buffalo. Yeah, they won those games, but they played Washington, Cleveland, Dallas, and Buffalo. You go back early in the season when they had their 3-game winning streak: Denver, Oakland, the New York Giants. So the Chargers are really good at beating bad teams. And you have to say to yourself, well, is Kansas City a bad team? Especially is Kansas City a bad team playing at home? And I would say no. I'm very surprised that the Chargers are taking all this money. I'll be on the Chiefs in this one. And I just like a fundamental team in the Chiefs. And I like, even though their numbers spread at home are not as strong as what they've been in the past, if you talk to players They say the two loudest places, two toughest places to play are Seattle and Kansas City. Now, I know that their spread records the last few years at home haven't been nearly as good, but so you have to take everything with a grain of salt. But when the players say that it's tough to play and Kansas City has got this showdown game at home, you know they're going to get the great turnout here, a loud turnout. I'm not sure how much L.A. Charger fans travel when half of the stadium, when they're playing at home, as the stand is filled with fans from the other team. I think this will be obviously a big Kansas City Chiefs home crowd, and I think we're getting some value here based on all the talking heads talking about the Chargers. And I talked earlier about stocks. You're taking the Chargers at a very high stock right now, and the Chiefs are relatively low to low. I think the Chiefs are the way to play this one.
I think so, too. And for those that have a sports book offering a money line, I think grabbing that at plus money right now is a good idea, because I think this line swings as we get closer to kickoff. Kansas City should close a favorite here. So if you can get that plus 102, plus 103, whatever it is on the money line, I think that's probably in your best interest to do that. Brian Leonard, as you mentioned, you've got the second half plays up on your Twitter account. That is at @BLeonardSports. Anything else you want to shout out here at the end of the segment?
No, not really. Working on basketball. I've been very selective with basketball and hockey so far, but success has been very good, and we'll try to continue that. And I'm looking to start putting up my some bowl games today and start some NFL today over at WagerTalk.com.
And that is Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com at @BLeonardSports on Twitter. Brian, appreciate your time, man. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great, and let's hope that snow melts for you in Cleveland.
Yeah, I hope so, too. In fact, it'll probably just continue to pile up, and we won't see grass again until probably the month of May or something like that. One more guest here on this Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is the great Wes Reynolds at Wes Reynolds and the number one on Twitter. Wes, how's it going today, man?
Hey, Adam. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. Appreciate your time. Sorry we couldn't get you on the show last week after we had yet another Blog Talk Radio screw up. And again, for our listeners out there, hoping to be done with those here very soon. I'm staring at this equipment that is daunting, and I can't figure it out, but hoping to do that here in the latter portion of this week. But, Wes, let's go ahead and talk about one of the things that we discussed in that previous segment there with Brian. Got a listener, C Moneybags, on Twitter, holding a Clemson 6-1 ticket, looking for some hedging advice. What would you have to say about that?
Well, I mean, there's a couple different options here. I mean, it's essentially a two-parter. I mean, you have to, I think, look at, you know, if you want to do the simplest hedge, obviously, would be to do just look at the actual Sugar Bowl game and just take Alabama on the money line, which I believe right now, as I pull that up, I think you could get it probably as low as $1.40. But you also have to take into consideration, if you want to do that, then you got to look at the other game, you know, and say, is Alabama better than Georgia or Alabama better than Oklahoma? If you think that that's the case, then you might just want to take a future on Alabama. And I don't have that board right in front of me. But if you want to hedge out with Clemson, I think it's probably, from everything I've seen, about +250 on Alabama. I mean, so you're not really getting a ton of value. It's not like if you were going to hedge with something like Georgia or Oklahoma, where you might get slightly better odds. I think I see Oklahoma somewhere around like 3-1. I mean, if you have that in front of you, but probably if I wanted to just kind of get my money and get out, maybe go with just the Alabama money line. But, you know, there is always the risk, of course, Clemson is going to win the game and then you got to hedge it again. But I personally like Alabama in the game. And I think the early money has kind of shown that. And I still think, you know, you're getting a relatively cheap price because Alabama, of course, is the team that was debated about in terms of getting in the college football playoffs. Should it be them or should it be Ohio State? You know, the fact that Alabama didn't have really a signature win this year, although LSU and Mississippi State aren't bad wins, they're not the top 10 wins that Ohio State had with Penn State and Wisconsin. So, you know, usually that team, it always goes to the, like, the NCAA tournament where there's that team that gets in that shouldn't be in, and everybody says they shouldn't be in. And then that's the team, at least for me, that I'll always bet on in the first round, is a team that nobody thinks should be in. So, you know, there's a debate of if Alabama should be in. So, I mean, that's one reason, besides many others, that I like them in the spot. So, I mean, you could really go about it a couple different ways. You know, there's a chance to maybe get a little more profit if you just go ahead and take Alabama on the futures board. But, you know, if you want to keep it simple, maybe just go Alabama money line.
And I'm glad we didn't talk about this in the first segment with Brian, because I figured that this was the route that you were going to go. So I wanted to make sure that I saved it here as I'm crowdsourcing some different opinions. But Alabama plus 182 at five dimes right now, plus 175 at Bet Online to win the college football playoff. And to me, that's the optimal way to go, because what you can do here is you've got your Clemson position at 6-1. You could take an Alabama position. We'll average out the numbers and say at plus 180. To where you can put whatever you want on that, and then you've got a free roll in the national championship game, because whoever Alabama plays, they're favored over. So then you can play back hedge on the money line with that team. So you're free rolling the national championship game, and you're increasing your profit margin, you know, by taking Alabama plus 180 as opposed to laying $1.40 on Alabama. So I think that absolutely is the right way to go, and I'm glad that that's the approach that you took, Wes.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And you're going to see, I think, Alabama more than likely, if they go ahead and beat Clemson, you got to think they're at least going to be a field goal favorite over Georgia or over Oklahoma. So, you know, you're going to get a plus money line either way on either one of those two teams against Alabama. So, you know, that's probably the best way to do it, I think, in terms of maximizing your profit there.
And if you really wanted to get complicated with it, I mean, BetOnline specifically, and I imagine other sports books are offering this as well, they're offering exact outcome props where you can take Alabama beats Georgia in the championship game plus 400 or Alabama beats Oklahoma plus 450. So if you want to take a little bit of a position on that other semifinal game or sort of diversify a little bit, and like I said, you are complicating the process. So this is something we're going to have to run the numbers, write it all down, track it, decide how you want to play this. But that is another option for you as well, to the point where, again, you're spreading money around on some different outcomes that do cover, you know, that 6-1 ticket that you have to begin with. So there are a lot of good ways to go about it. And I know Brian's got a 20-1 on Georgia, which gives you a much greater spread and a lot more flexibility here. But you can still do some things with a 6-1 to make it worth your while.
Yeah, and then plus you're adding to the fact that once you're getting to the game, once you're to that part two of the actual national championship game, and even in the semifinals, there's always half times, there's always live betting. That's probably even further complicating the process. But I mean, you know, there's really a lot of ways to go with that. But I think probably the Alabama future would be the simplest way.
Yeah, that's definitely a starting point to be sure. And I like that we're able to have this discussion, and I love having this discussion with Kyle Hunter when we do conference tournaments in March Madness, because you've got a lot of opportunities there to make these different types of hedges. You know, you pick a mid-range conference tournament future, they get to the championship game, and then you can start talking about hedging in that respect. So, you know, I love that conversation, and it's a very important conversation to have because, you know, again, we've talked about this ad nauseum on the show. Full game betting is hard to do. You know, I know you specialize in playing first halves, second halves, those derivatives that we always talk about. You know, diversifying your bankroll, becoming more of a better than a handicapper, to me, is the way to make money in this industry nowadays. And this hedging discussion, you know, is part of that equation.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, that's something with me, and I don't think it's exclusive to me. I think it's probably for the majority of people that do sports betting, whether they do it full-time or they do it just casually, is not just necessarily learning the handicapping. I think you could teach about anybody the handicapping if they're willing to kind of put in the work and you know, look at the different stats and you know, really get into the fundamentals and to the psychology of the different spots and scheduling spots. But the toughest part of the industry, you know, is I think betting. I mean, it's like poker. Anybody can learn how to play poker, but it's how you bet. That's the secret. I mean, anybody knows, okay, what hands are good or what positions are monitoring, what guys at the table are betting, or if you're on the button or whatever. I mean, I'm a casual poker player, so I'm probably not the best guy to talk about this, but I mean, you can learn the game, but it's about learning how to bet. And I think that's always the most difficult thing for most sports bettors.
No, I completely agree. I'm glad that we were able to have this discussion. And like I said, I like the approach that you took with it. And, you know, I'm glad that we were able to illustrate two different approaches, you know, to the same question. And ultimately, that's another element of betting here, is that you're going to have choices, you know, and it's just like playing cards. Do you flat call? Do you three bet? You know, do you try to set up a trap? Do you be aggressive? Do you try to win the pot, not let them chase down a draw? You know, you have some of those options with your own personal bankroll here when it comes to betting, especially when you talk about hedging futures. So I think it's a great conversation to have, and hopefully, like I said, we'll get to have a lot of them once we get to the college basketball season. But Wes, let's go ahead and talk about some of those individual games here. And in week 15, we've got this matchup between Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck. We have this matchup between Trevor Siemian and Jacoby Brissett on Thursday Night Football. Denver, 2.5-point favorite here. And this isn't the game that it would have been 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, it's turning out to kind of be a dud matchup. I mean, you know, sometimes you get stuck with this before the season and you think, hey, this could be a pretty good matchup. You might have two teams battling for a playoff spot here. But, you know, Denver, I think, is still mathematically alive, I believe, but they would need a lot of things to happen. Colts were eliminated last week. But, you know, so you're kind of stuck with this matchup. But it is a little bit interesting to look at the line because I think what you've seen here is, I think you've seen maybe some of the Sharpies early in the week when this opened kind of maybe got out ahead of the market anticipating some Denver money, which I think we've seen. You know, I don't know if that's their true opinion on the game in terms of or maybe they're wanting to see if they can drive this thing to 3. It's 2.5, I think, you know, juiced maybe to about 115 or 120 at a lot of at some places. That maybe if they can get the Colts to 3, that they would take it. Or if they don't want to do that, maybe go ahead and take the teaser play. But I think, you know, if I'm going ahead and doing this side, and I mean, I probably will end up doing a teaser to tease that Colts maybe through the 3 and the 7 up to 8.5. I don't think that's necessarily a bad bet in light of what we've seen the last couple weeks and what we see late in the season, where, you know, teams know that they're out of it. I mean, I think the Colts coaching staff, especially, you know, Chuck Pagano, he knows that he's probably going to be out of work in 3 weeks. And, you know, I think you see the handwriting on the wall. But you've seen some of these underdogs get up in these primetime games. You saw the Bengals a couple weeks ago on Monday night. Now, granted, they weren't totally out of the playoffs, but they got up and really should have beaten the Steelers in that game, had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. They ended up pushing, I believe, or they ended up covering the number, but didn't win the game. And then you saw Miami just a couple nights ago pretty much dominate the game. It looked like, you know, New England never really threatened. They didn't make a third down the entire game and really missed Gronkowski. And I think Miami knows that they're up against it in terms of making the playoffs, but they got up because it was a primetime game and because it was the Patriots. And I think you could see this here with the Colts in terms of getting up. Denver broke a losing streak last week. They beat the Jets. You know, I ended up having Denver in a bunch of teasers because I didn't think the Jets really merited being a road favorite there at Denver, which, despite the quality of the team, is still a tough place to win on the road. So I ended up having Denver in a bunch of teasers last week. But, you know, I look at this, and I think the numbers are so deceiving because if you look at the Colts' numbers, they're really bad in terms of season-long. I think they're 31st in total yards on offense. They're 31st in points allowed on defense, which is 31st, second to last in the league. I think you look at some of these stats, if you look at the season-long stats, you can see why Denver's a little bit of the favorite. But taking out last week's Snow Bowl in Buffalo, where they gave up a pretty good amount of rushing yards because, I mean, it was so tough to throw the football that you had to run the ball a lot. I mean, it was almost like the Army-Navy game Saturday where there were very few passes in snow, and the conditions in Buffalo were much worse. But if you take out that Buffalo game as an outlier in terms of defending the run, if you look at the Colts' last five games, they allowed 96 yards on 27 carries to Jacksonville, 92 yards on 28 carries to Tennessee, 88 yards on 30 carries to Pittsburgh, 94 yards on 21 carries to Houston, 58 yards on 21 carries to Cincinnati. The Colts' rush defense, I mean, and you're having to look for things because the season has been so bad when you're a 3-10 team. You got to look for some signs of hope and optimism. The run defense has actually been very good for the Colts the last month and a half or so. And I think that Chris Ballard, you know, you had to make a lot of different moves. Chris Ballard, who of course is the Colts GM, you have to make a lot of different moves on the on your personnel. And I think his defensive line moves have been better, especially the interior defensive line. You're starting to see the results of that. Now, the team still lacks a pass rusher, and they still have linebackers that need to be better in pass coverage, and they've had a lot of injuries in the secondary. But you know, you see some signs of hope. And I think this team, the Colts, they're still playing hard. You know, I don't think they've totally mailed it in here. And if I was to go just a straight bet on the side, I would go to with the Colts and see if it got to three, or maybe if I could buy it to three at a little bit less. Because usually if you're buying on a key number to three in the NFL, they're going to put it at plus three minus 125. But maybe you might be able to get it at maybe plus three minus 115 at some point, depending on the juice on the Denver side. But, you know, I just don't have the confidence in Denver being a road favorite here, despite who they're playing. I mean, I don't think their quarterback play has been good all year. And I think that their running game, which they're usually known for, has been pretty pedestrian. Their defense is still very good, but that maybe the Colts, you know, for this one time, knowing where they're at, knowing that they're pretty much playing out the string, that they maybe at least get up for a primetime game here. So that's the direction I would look.
Especially to be a road favorite on a short week, which, you know, I mean, I don't really see that from Denver. Maybe the defense is fixed off of that shutout against the Jets, and maybe that's kind of driving this line up a little bit. But, you know, like you, I don't know if I see it in that same light. And for the Colts, I mean, I think you brought up a lot of excellent points. And obviously, you know, you're very in tune with this team being in that area. So, you know, what's going on with Pagano's situation, what the front office is going to be looking to do. You know, the great unknown here for Indianapolis is, in this year's draft, do they need to figure out something at the quarterback position? Can they buy on Andrew Luck long term with the injury problems that he's had? And, you know, maybe we don't have an answer to that question yet. Maybe we won't have an answer to that question in April either. But, you know, for the time being, Jacoby Brissett is a guy that has tools. And he's a guy that, you know, can help this team in the short term. So, you know, maybe this is a spot where he does show that a little bit. And like you said here with the Denver team, just it's a trust factor. You know, and this late in the season, when you have teams that are going to quit, when you have teams that just aren't very good, when you have teams that are making long travel and you figure they're probably not going to play, you got to have a lot of trust at this time of the year. And like you said, I think there's one team that you know, have a better chance of trusting in this spot.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, with the Colts, there is so many unknowns. I mean, they're probably not going to know until springtime, you know, where they kind of are with Andrew Luck. And if they, decide, you know, this team probably is looking at least at the top five or six draft pick, and they're going to have the opportunity to take a quarterback more than likely. Do you do that as an insurance policy? And then, you know, if Luck is okay, knowing that you're already paying him $20 million a year and you're financially committed to him, do you go ahead and do that? You know, and go ahead and maybe trade the pick, or go ahead and trade Jacoby Brissett? I mean, you know, There's a lot of things. There's a lot of things at play here for the future of the Colts. But for this game, I mean, I think even some of the fans around here are getting frustrated that they're getting too close to winning. You know, some of these games where it's like, okay, you know, we want to, you know, there was the old suck for luck. You know, are we doing a tanker for Baker, or what are we doing here? But you know, the players don't think about that. I mean, they're still going to go out and I think give an effort here. And you know, I think the Colts are probably, I would lean to them being the right side.
All right, let's look ahead to Sunday here. Game 309, 310 on the board. Green Bay takes on Carolina. Obviously a huge story here with Aaron Rodgers coming back. Now, this line opened Carolina -2. The places that still have it open, and a lot of them do, 2.5 with extra juice, or there's a 3 out there at Bookmaker. Are you surprised that we really haven't seen the Aaron Rodgers effect hit the market yet?
I think there's still an uncertainty of him playing. I know some of the reports say he's probable, but then some of the reports are saying, well, he's still trying to get back and kind of trying to, you know, to whether that's going to be, in fact, totally confirmed here as if he's going to play. I mean, had, you know, I think the value here might have been on Green Bay if Rodgers wasn't going to play, you know, if Hundley were to play, and I would have guessed that the line would have been maybe a slightly less than a touchdown here. I mean, that would have gotten me interested because I think you had Carolina beat Minnesota off that win, and I had Carolina last week, and I wasn't sure necessarily why they were the underdog, even though I think Minnesota is very good, especially defensively, and you know, Carolina got right off that win against New Orleans, and I think that the fact that the Saints have swept them, Carolina, I think, knows more than likely, unless the Saints really struggle here down the stretch, that they're playing for a wild card here when all of a sudden you got Green Bay back in the picture. And I thought that there was going to be a little bit of value on the Packers here simply because they really were life and death with Cleveland. And once again, to bring up a long-running topic on our segments this season, the Browns find a way to not cover a game. I mean, this was probably the worst of the worst. They've had about 3 or 4 of them this year. And to be up 2 touchdowns, getting over a field goal, and you know, you find your way in overtime, and then you get the ball first. So there's really almost no way you could not cover the game. I mean, even if you don't score and you give up 3, you cover the game. Or if you get 3 and give up a touchdown, they don't kick the extra point, and you still cover if you're taking the 3.5. And somehow they found the way to miss the tackle and go ahead and not only get beat but not cover in overtime. But And that's why I thought the perception was going to be down on Green Bay a little bit with the fact that they probably shouldn't have beaten Cleveland in Cleveland. In fact, they should have lost the game, but they somehow hung on. And, you know, you go week to week with recency bias, people are going to say, well, you know, they struggled at Cleveland, so how the hell can you take them against the Carolina team that – beat Minnesota, even though that game got a lot closer at the end. I mean, they were clearly the better team and led the whole game. So, you know, this is kind of one that, you know, there's a lot of ways you could maybe get involved in this game, but I don't know if I'm ready to get involved yet because, you know, obviously Rodgers, you know, makes a difference probably as much, if not more so than any other player in the entire league. But the fact that he's been out, I mean, you know how good he is, and you know that his ceiling is very high, but he's been out for a while, and sometimes it takes a game or two to get over an injury like that. So I certainly don't think I want to take the Packers on a straight bet +3. I mean, maybe it's a potential teaser candidate here, but, you know, I don't know if I'm ready. I'm a little bit squeamish about this game, and I think – you still have your fair share of books that have this game still off the board. I know that, you know, I'm seeing Greek and I'm seeing some of the Las Vegas shops, William Hill, Cantor, Station Casinos, even some of the offshore credit shops still have this game on the board. So it is tough for me to really make a case for either side yet at this point in the week.
I think it's such a fascinating game and a challenging game because, like you said, if it was clear that Brett Hundley was going to be the starter in this game, it's probably Carolina -5.5, -6, something like that, as you alluded to, if not even 7. But the expectation that Aaron Rodgers would be cleared and subsequently would play opened this number a little bit low. So I get the reason why Carolina money is coming in here. And also, too, I mean, there could be a rust factor with Aaron Rodgers. I mean, the guy's an elite quarterback. He'll be in Canton one day. He's very, very good. But he's also been off for a long time, hasn't been practicing with the ones. Green Bay's running game's kind of been hit or miss with the injuries. The offensive line has had some problems as well. So, you know, there are some situations here where this Green Bay team just may not be set up for immediate success with Aaron Rodgers back. Now, on the flip side with Carolina here, I mean, Carolina's a 9-4 team, but are they the least talked about 9-4 team we've ever had in the NFL? I just sort of feel like nobody really says much about them.
Yeah, and what I was going to interject there is, I mean, when you were talking about Rodgers and a rust factor, look at the first few weeks of the season with Carolina, how off Cam looked and how that shoulder was still bothering him. And I mean, you could tell in some of those games, you know, they started out kind of bad. I mean, they won that game in San Francisco basically because not very good, and they basically won that game with their defense. So, I mean, I think, though, that Carolina has kind of, you know, not necessarily come out of nowhere. I mean, they had that good performance on Monday night against Miami where they absolutely ran away from them and pretty much stomped them. But the talk, I think, in that division has been the Saints. And I think, you know, for fairly good reason. They're very tough to beat at home. They're 9-4. And they have the lead really in the division in terms of you know, having a little bit of a stranglehold with getting a sweep over Carolina. And I know they lost to Atlanta on Thursday night, but they get them at home on Christmas Eve, so they have a chance to really rectify that. They've got their next two games at home, and then they've got a road game at Tampa Bay on New Year's Eve, and you know that Tampa Bay team is for all intents and purposes out of the playoffs, and have had so many injuries this year that, you know, there's a potential that they can maybe phone it in and be ready for their tee times to go ahead and set up that and set up their vacation for the off season. But you know, this is a big game for Carolina because I think Carolina's got to look at the fact that the Saints got a pretty easy schedule. They're going to be favored in all of their three games. And the fact that you need help in order to win the division. So I think that they know that. And, I mean, this is a team right now that's right there in the wild card race. They'd be in the fifth seed, would actually play New Orleans in the first round at the end of the day. But you've still got Atlanta and Seattle there at 8-5. Detroit and Green Bay certainly aren't done at 7-6, especially if you get a Rodgers back and he's able to perform. Dallas is still 7-6. So, you know, you've got, I think, a lot of teams in the mix here in the NFC in kind of that three seed. Philadelphia and Minnesota look clearly like they're going to be the top two seeds, at least right now. But you've got a jumble of teams that are pretty darn equal. You know, where you could throw a blanket over them from the Rams on down to maybe Dallas. So, you know, this is a huge game for Carolina, and you don't want to, even if Aaron Rodgers plays, you don't necessarily want to write them off prematurely.
All right, let's shift gears here and let's talk some NBA, and we'll look specifically at some of tonight's games and sort of illustrate, you know, some of the betting angles that you're looking for here at this time of the year. And I guess I'll ask a general overview question first. Are you doing a lot of what you did last season in terms of your NBA handicapping? Have you made any real significant adjustments to your thought process or maybe to some of the stats that you use, anything like that?
You know, I think I've looked a lot more too at streaks instead of, you know, not necessarily fading streaks so much. And I think it's worked out better for me because one of the things I would do is you know, try to get in front of a streak, and then it would continue. I mean, you see a lot of streaks in this league over the course of a season, whether it's a total streak or covering at home or just an overall win streak. I mean, we saw it with Boston this year when they had that long win streak, and then Cleveland was having that long win streak after, you know, the first 3 weeks of the season where they looked awful, where they were a few games under 500, and then all of a sudden they win 12, 13 in a row and was able to at least get in front of that streak, taking the Pacers last week on Friday night. But, you know, I think that's kind of a little bit what I've looked towards. And also, just looking at, the consistency in terms of what you're seeing and trying to look at, trying not to, I guess, be a slave to what the preseason projections were, you know, instead of, this team started off slow and they were predicted to be better and then immediately go into them. I mean, some teams, you know, it doesn't happen for them or the light doesn't come on until later in the season. You know, usually with 25 games, you get a good barometer, but you'll have a team that might start out a house of fire that all of a sudden after the All-Star break are not the same team. And then you'll have teams that start off really slow that maybe the light switch doesn't come on until the season is played. So, you know, every team is different. And I don't think that you want to just totally be a slave to the projections and assume that there's going to be necessarily regression. I mean, some teams are going to soar over their season win totals and some teams are going to go way under.
Now, one of the games that you had some interesting thoughts on earlier on in the week, and you were sort of wondering how this game would set up for you, game 705-706 on the board here tonight. Oklahoma City takes on Indiana, and obviously there are some very big storylines here for this one, with Paul George taking on Indiana, his return trip to Indianapolis. The Pacers opened a 1.5-point favorite. This number is down to Pick'em or Oklahoma City -1 across the market. Surprised with that move, Wes?
You know, I'm actually not, and I did bet Oklahoma City at +2, and I just think that this is a, you know, I think the Pacers are a team, and I think that they are legitimately better. You know, you may see some regression, but I think that they are legitimately better than what they were projected, and Victor Oladipo, I think, finally has gotten an opportunity to showcase himself a little bit better. And sometimes, you know, it's just getting a player in the right situation. And, you know, that guy, I think, would be easily selected to the NBA All-Star team if the selections were today. But the reason I went with Oklahoma City, there, you know, is kind of threefold here. One, you have a Pacers team that now is all of a sudden getting attention. They were kind of under the radar because everybody obviously is focused on the two main teams in the East with Cleveland and Boston, and both have seemingly, you know, been playing pretty well. Detroit got off to a house of fire, and now they've kind of fallen back to earth a little bit. And, you know, the youngsters in Philadelphia, you know, a lot of people have been talking about them, and they've certainly gotten a lot of publicity. But the Pacers really haven't gotten a lot. They've kind of been under the radar, and they're now, you know, in the top four in the East. But, you know, what I've seen over the years with the Pacers, it's kind of like, you know, when they start to accomplish something, it's kind of like, hey, what about us, you know? And then they start to get a little bit of attention, and then they kind of fall into a flat spot. And that's what I think may happen here tonight. And also with Oklahoma City, you know, they have – been probably one of the big disappointments of the season. I think there were some people that made a case for them saying, you know, this team might be the dark horse in the Western Conference to challenge the Warriors, and they're under 500 right now. And I don't think they've kind of figured out how to fit all those pieces together with Russ and Carmelo and Paul George. And, you know, they've been consistently inconsistent. And if you look at how they've been playing up until tonight, they go to Mexico City and they lose to Brooklyn. Then they have a road game at Memphis, who seemingly can't win a game right now, and are without Michael Conley Jr. And Oklahoma City barely gets out of there by the skin of their teeth, winning by one in OT. And then they go home to Charlotte and get beat by double digits, and their defense was awful. And, you know, they just look all out of whack. But I think that this is the kind of spot where maybe you can refocus them. And, I mean, you see this in the – I know you bet NHL as well. You see this in the NHL all the time, where the goaltender is playing his old team and the guys, you know, really step up for him and are blocking shots and playing defense and just skating really hard and diving for the puck. And you kind of see that. And maybe this can happen for Oklahoma City, in the fact that they know this dude is coming home, Paul George. They know he's going to get booed because of the way he left. And, you know, the fact that he kind of left the Pacers in the lurch here. And everybody said, you know, most experts, how the Pacers got fleeced in that trade with only getting Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis back. And I think the Pacers actually did very well, considering the circumstances that Paul George kind of left them in, saying at the last minute, hey, I'm not gonna resign. You know, where it was almost like him and his people were putting out, hey, it's trading into the Lakers or nothing, you know. Well, I mean, you know, that really put Kevin Pritchard and the Pacers front office in a tough position. So, you know, I would expect both teams to be motivated here. But in light of how Oklahoma City has played and in light of how the Pacers have played lately, I was kind of wondering, well, why is it 1.5 or 2 and why isn't it 3? I mean, you certainly could find enough bettors in the market that would be willing to lay 3 or a smallish money line with the Pacers, considering the recency bias and how the Thunder have played. But yet it came in for the most part of 1.5, and now you're seeing the Thunder is the favorite here. You know, we talk about this a lot in past editions of the podcast, and sometimes when you lose a game at home, even though the Thunder had been on the road, but when you have a bad performance at home, sometimes the best thing is to go on the road. And I think this might be the case for the Thunder here tonight.
Now, there's a game on the board here. And by the way, I think you broke that down very, very eloquently. So I'm glad that we were able to hit on that game. The game 709-710 here between Portland and Miami. This is a line that I don't really get. Now, I will admit I don't follow the NBA as closely as I follow a lot of other markets. But Miami's only a 2.5-point favorite here. You've got a Portland team that's dropped 5 straight. You've got a Portland team that just played Golden State, gave them a pretty good effort on the road and lost, had a cross-country travel on Tuesday out to Miami, probably went out Tuesday night in Miami, because when you go to Miami, that's what you're going to do. And then they play the Heat here tonight to kick off a 4-games-in-6-days road stretch to Miami, Orlando, Charlotte, and Minnesota. Portland is the better team. I fully understand that. But why is this line only 2.5? This is one that I absolutely have circled in my mind, and you know, maybe I can get somebody more well-versed in the NBA than me to tell me why.
Well, I mean, when I was looking at this and when you were saying, hey, this might be a game we talk about, really this is kind of a game where I'd like to go against both teams. But I can't really do that because, I mean, you have Portland, who's on a 5-game losing streak. I typically don't like to bet on a team that the game after they played the Warriors or after they played one of the elite teams, you know, the Warriors, I think the more pronounced of those situations. But, you know, when a team plays an elite team, like at the Warriors or the Spurs, the previous game, well, you know that they're at least going to be up for them, you know, that they're at least going to try, whether they win or lose close or lose by a bundle. I mean, you know that they're at least going to give an effort against those elite teams. And I guess you could probably put Boston and Cleveland in that category as well. So I really don't think I want Portland here. I mean, because of coming off that Golden State and because of the fact that they're really in the midst of this streak. But I don't know if I want Miami here either, because they're off a 3-game road trip. They haven't been at home since December 3rd. They had a couple days off, and they had a 3-game road trip. And I usually don't like teams that come home off a road trip in that first game. We've talked about that before. And then they immediately go play a road game after that. So it's just coming home for one game. It's not necessarily coming home for a homestand. So then they got to go on the road. I forget who their next opponent is. It's Charlotte or somebody where they got to go on the road, I believe, Friday night. So this is a spot where I really don't know if I want either team. I agree with your initial analysis in terms of Miami, wondering why this line is so low, even though, you know, if Portland and Miami play, you know, 11 times, Portland's probably, you know, would win six of them at least. And so, you know, I'm looking at the same thing you are, wondering why this line is what it is, but that might be something that kind of scares me off of this spot a little bit. I mean, if I were going to play anything here, it might be the total and, you know, the over, where I think it's mostly 203, got some 202s out there. But, you know, if you're at me for like an opinion on this game, that would be where it is. And I would look toward the total on this, especially if Nurkic, Damian Lillard, did have an ankle issue last game, but he is going to play. And off that great performance he had individually at Golden State on Monday night. But you still have Nurkic, who's questionable. And I wonder if this move to the over is kind of an anticipatory thing of Nurkic being ruled to be back tonight. He's still listed as questionable. But I think Portland has clearly missed him. The last few games, and I think that is a big part of why they've had this five-game losing streak.
Well, and this is why I picked the games that we discussed during our NBA segments. You've got Paul George going back to Indianapolis. You've got Portland in a bad spot, Miami in an interesting spot there with a standalone home game. We know standalone road games generally aren't great for teams, but the standalone home game is an altogether different animal. So I want to ask you about one other element here on tonight's NBA card. The two late games, Toronto-Phoenix 7:15, 7:16, and Charlotte-Houston 7:17, 7:18. A couple of double-digit favorites here in this one. Toronto a double-digit favorite on the road in Phoenix. Houston a double-digit favorite against the Charlotte team that's been absolutely awful on the road. Wes, how do you handle these double-digit situations in the NBA? Because in the NFL, you know, for the most part, it used to be, well, you'd almost, well, a lot of sharp guys would auto-play those double-digit games. We've seen a lot of them here this year, and a lot of times the favorites have covered. Is there sort of a rule of thumb or maybe something that you follow when it comes to those big NBA numbers?
You know, not necessarily. I mean, it's still, I think, looking for me at least, it's an individual case-by-case basis. This is the last game of the road trip for Toronto. Won their first two in Memphis and Sacramento, lost on Monday night in L.A., had a lead in the fourth quarter, and you know, L.A. was able to kind of hang in, and that was a team that I think has been desperate for wins lately in light of all the injuries that they've had. And, you know, this has been a tough start for the Clippers, and I thought that they might be a little bit better. I mean, certainly the Griffin injury hurts, but, you know, I thought they'd be a little better than they currently are. Well, they got the win over Toronto, and now you have Toronto coming into Phoenix. This is a team that they actually played back on the 5th. So, you know, a little over a week ago, and won by 13. Phoenix kind of hung around the number and covered at the end after Toronto really, I think, pulled away in the late third quarter and the early fourth quarter. So, you know, you do wonder a little bit about Toronto here when it's the last game of your trip. You know that you have a split at least guaranteed, and you know that, you know, you probably with maybe your B effort can still get by and get a win over this team, whether you can cover 11, you know, win by more than 11.5, I think begs the question a little bit. Phoenix, you know, I think that, you know, they're still not good. They're 9-20, but I think that they've at least shown a little bit more life. I think with this coaching switch to Jay Triano, but they still have some games where they get blown out. This is a team, I think, with a lot of good young talent, but this is still a super young team. So you're going to have some games, really erratic efforts out of Phoenix. I mean, looking at their last 10 games, I mean, they lose by 24 at Detroit. Then they compete with Boston and are fairly close late in the fourth quarter. Then they go win in Philadelphia as 10-point underdogs by 14. And, you know, I think played pretty solid basketball on that road trip, even though they went 2-3, but they went 4-1 in ATS. Or, excuse me, 4-1-1 because they pushed in Minnesota. But, you know, this is a team that, I mean, you kind of don't know what you're going to get because it's so young. This is a team that can pull an upset and almost beat anybody, and then this is a team that can get a mud hole stomped in them. They're off the loss in Sacramento last night. So, I mean, my initial lean, I guess, would be to the Suns here, simply because this is the last game of the trip for Toronto. They've been on the road for over a week. You know, you're probably looking forward to getting back home. Their last home game actually was against this same Phoenix team back on the 5th. So you have to look at that fact as well. And then I guess turning over to the Charlotte game as I kind of look at this. Houston's been on a roll, and Houston, you know, looks like the real true elite team. I think a lot of people thought maybe the Thunder were going to be that team that maybe can step up and challenge the Warriors. But, you know, it looks to me right now like it's the Rockets, because that's a team that can score the ball and that can score with the team. The Rockets are on a huge streak right now. I mean, they've actually been better on the road this year straight up. 12-1 versus 9-3 at home. Looking at Charlotte, they've got their fair share of injuries, and they're having to play a little bit of smaller ball. I believe Kaminsky's going to be back, but you have Cody Zeller out, so that makes you a little bit of a smaller team in terms of going into your depth. Batum has been in and out of the lineup with his elbow injury, so you know. Looking at this, I mean, sometimes you could kind of look at the over, I guess, the totals in terms of how you can handicap a side, I guess, through a total. And obviously the Rockets total are going to be pretty high, but you're not seeing a lot of movement toward the over here, which would make me maybe lean a little bit to the Charlotte side. And I think the fact that the Spurs, or not the Spurs, the Rockets, rather, have games where they've got the Spurs coming in on Friday night, and I think that's kind of the who's going to be the big challenger to Golden State game, you know, even though it's only one game to be seen like that, and the fact that the last time they played the Spurs, they got beat by 39 points, so. You know, the Rockets, I think, are going to remember that and maybe be geared up for that. So, you know, I think in both spots you could definitely make cases for the double-digit dogs here.
Lots of excellent analysis and insight here from Wes Reynolds on today's edition of Bang the Book Radio. You can follow him on Twitter at Wes Reynolds and then #1. Wes, thank you so much for your time, man. Really, really appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you, Adam, for having me on. Enjoy the games, everyone.
Great stuff there today from Wes Reynolds and also Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. Coming up on our Thursday edition of Bang the Book Radio, two professional handicappers and bettors join us. The first, Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. The second, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Friday, Westgate Super Contest Selection segment. Once again, I'm going to be strong-arming Joe Everett into joining me after back-to-back 4-1 weeks. And then also Brent from DSI Sports will get this week's version of the odds report. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.